3rd, 2010. We have a quorum here in the Judiciary Committee to conduct business. Senator McGuire is here, Senator Egan, Senator Coghill, and myself, Senator French. We are here today for a hearing on Citizens United versus FEC, the recent Supreme Court decision affecting corporate spending in elections. You have a packet, the members have a packet, and the public, I think we've provided the same materials to, that includes the lengthy Supreme Court opinion in its entirety, including the concurring and dissenting opinions. You should have a set of Alaska statutes dealing with campaign disclosure law. There is also a memorandum done by Ledge Legal and Mr. Bullard, who's here for Representative Ramirez, covering some of the aspects of the opinion and what it does and does not cover. And we also included in the packet a pair of amicus briefs to the Supreme Court before its decision was rendered, kind of representing both sides of the debate. Mm-hmm. One from John McCain and Russell Feingold, arguing for keeping the rules in place as they stood before the decision was rendered, and one from the AFL-CIO, urging that the court overturn its previous holdings and embark on a new rule. I guess I would just point out from the beginning that this is a sweeping case. It's going to have, I think, a lot of impacts in state law. And I couldn't resist beginning with a quote from Theodore Roosevelt in 1905, who said, all contributions by corporations to any political committee or for any political purpose should be forbidden by law, which I thought was remarkable coming that long ago. So my idea for today's hearing is to have Ledge Legal come forward and give us 5 to 10 minutes of an overview of the decision, kind of get us oriented. We'll turn to the Department of Law, let them do the same thing in the way of an overview of the decision, and then we'll open it up to questions for all of our lawyers and keep them simultaneously at the table so that we can get a variety of views, if there are any, on each question that the committee comes up with. So with that, let's go ahead and have Ledge Legal come forward. Welcome, Mr. Bullard. It's Kurtz. How are you? And we'll welcome Senator Wilikowski. We've just gotten started. We were just haven't even begun the testimony. And welcome to you. If you'd both put yourselves on the record, tell us who you are and where you're from, and then we'll go ahead and hear your testimony.
My name is Catherine Kurtz, and I'm an assistant reviser of statutes with the Legislative Affairs Agency. And I used to be the drafting attorney in this area many years ago. And currently, Mr. Bullard is the drafting attorney for campaign finance, so I'm going to let him give you a little outline.
Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Alpheus Bullard. I'm an attorney with the Legislative Affairs Agency, and you requested that I be here today to speak to Citizens United. I'll speak briefly about Citizens United, and I would be happier fielding questions if you should have any. In talking about this case, the most significant element is that it's a First Amendment case dealing with political speech by corporations.
Mr. Bullard, you'll have to pull this mic a little closer to you. Thank you.
Citizens United is a First Amendment case dealing with political speech by corporations in the form of independent expenditures. Independent expenditures being those that are made without the cooperation or collaboration of a campaign, a candidate, or a political party. This is not a case that affects contributions to candidates. I think that it's important to set that out first, that we are only dealing with independent expenditures by corporations being spoken to by this decision. Previous to this decision, and still, in First Amendment jurisprudence, a great deal is determined by who the speaker is. Different speakers have different rights under the First Amendment. Speakers may be prisoners, students, foreign nationals, and previously corporations. The significance of this case is that the Supreme Court has ruled that a speaker's corporate identity is no longer a permissible distinction to regulate that speaker's political speech in this independent expenditure area. In the case, it dealt with provisions of the Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act, better known as the McCain-Feingold law, that dealt with federal candidates, federal elections. those portions that the court dealt with. One was a prohibition on certain corporations and unions from using monies from their general treasury to sponsor certain electioneering communications in various set periods before a primary or a federal election. That was struck down. In striking this provision down, the court went back not to the particulars of this law, but to the concept of the speaker's corporate identity. This involved overturning previous precedent, Austin and McConnell, fairly large cases going back 20 years, that had created a permissible rationale for suppressing various corporate speech in this venue. Also, in Citizens United, the court upheld various disclosure provisions in the Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act. To us here, in this room, it's significant, not just for what it does for federal elections, but because this rationale that was struck down, the ability to suppress speech on the basis of the speaker's corporate identity, has a bearing on our own statutes. We are one of 24 states that prohibit various corporate expenditures in our elections. In light of this ruling, those statutes are not repealed, they're void. A court will no longer enforce them as they're written. Mm-hmm. I guess that would be my very quick and dirty overview of this case. If there are particular directions that you'd like me to go in, I'd be happy to speak to those.
I sense we're going to have a large number of questions for you, Mr. Bullard, and you, Ms. Kurtz. Thank you. But we do have another attorney here from the Department of Law, and perhaps we could get the same overview from the Department of Law's perspective, and then we'll proceed to pepper you all with questions as they come up. Senator McGuire.
And Mr. Chairman, just a question for you. At some point, will somebody be walking us through the provisions of Alaska state law that will be affected by this ruling?
Yes, and you should have a list of questions on your desk that I sent to Ledge Legal last Friday, just to sort of get them pointed in the right direction. And I think that was one of the questions, and that's certainly on my mind as we proceed, is to, by statute number, find out where we are with respect to the laws we have in the book. Welcome, sir, and put yourself on the record. Tell us who you are, and then we'll go ahead and hear your testimony.
Thank you. My name is John Patasson. I'm an assistant attorney general with Department of Law. I work for Labor and State Affairs. I represent APOC, Alaska Public Offices Commission, in various matters when they're general matters. I represent the APOC staff in adjudications. I also assist the staff in drafting advisory opinions in this area. Obviously, today we're here to discuss Citizens United and any potential impacts on Alaska law. Try to keep my comments general at the outset, but at any time, please feel free to stop me. And first, at the outset, it's important to note what laws are not affected by Citizens United. Independent contributions to a candidate are still unaffected, and corporation and labor unions, their inability to make contributions directly to a candidate is unaffected by the decision. I think it's important to take a look at what type of case this was. It was a candidate election free speech case. It wasn't a ballot measure case. Mm-hmm. And it's important to note at the outset that Citizens United didn't interpret an Alaska law, but Alaska laws are certainly implicated by the court's decision, because U.S. Supreme Court constitutional decisions are the supreme law of the land. And states in this area do not have greater latitude than Congress to abridge the freedom of speech. Citizens United dealt not only with independent expenditures, but also with the reporting of those independent expenditures. And it's an important distinction in campaign and election law that I believe we're going to have to take up today and in the coming months. Essentially, it did overturn one aspect of independent expenditure law. It was a federal law, 2 U.S.C. 441B, and that was a ban on any express corporate or labor union advocacy for or against a candidate made from the corporation or labor union's general treasury fund 30 days before a primary election and 60 days before a candidate election. Again, the decision was specific to candidate elections. It has no bearing on the ballot measure laws of our state. And it's important to know that what we're dealing with is independent expenditures. And the court ruled that this ban on corporations or labor unions making an independent expenditure leading up to primary and general candidate elections was ruled in violation of the First Amendment. One of the things that's significant about the case is that, yes, it does apply First Amendment rights to a corporation. Citizens United was a corporation, and as a corporation, it has certain legal rights in our societies, limited liability and perpetual life. The court ruled that these favorable aspects of corporations and labor unions were not a good enough reason to strike down their ability to speak under the First Amendment. And the amendment doesn't limit itself to personal speakers. It limits the question that courts have asked, and it wasn't the first time the court's been asked. In Bilotti, back in the late 70s, the court determined that corporations, that the court is actually looking at the specific expression and not who's making the expression when determining whether a particular expression is afforded First Amendment rights. And in this case, making a communication electioneering speech is essentially political speech, and that's afforded high constitutional rights. The government tried three different arguments to try to save the law on compelling government interest grounds. One was the anti-distortion interest, that wealth dilutes the message of others. And that's the rationale that had been approved by the court in Austin v. Michigan Chamber of Commerce in 1990. The essential element is that this accumulation of wealth has a corrosive and distorting effect on the message. And this is no longer a rationale for disallowing corporations and labor unions' First Amendment political speech. They tried an anti-corruption interest as another compelling government interest to save the law, and there wasn't the court also did not agree with this rationale, and I can get into specifics on that later if you have questions. But the third one was shareholder protection, that essentially shareholders are powerless to stop the message of the larger corporation or labor union. That was also struck down, and I can give specifics on that at a later point during the testimony. But the conclusion is that without a compelling government interest, the law on its face was unconstitutional, and it now constitutes the supreme law of the land. So that's my general overview of the case itself. Now, it certainly has, it certainly requires the Department of Law to review whether it has impacts on Alaska law going forward, and we're certainly doing that, and we're preparing internal decisions and determinations, and we look forward to working with the legislature on determining where we go from here. So that would be the extent of my opening remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Patasin. Let's go ahead and bring the other two back up, please. Mr. Bullard and Ms. Kurtz. And okay. And just as a note to you three, as you share this mic, it's hard for the folks in back to hear you. So when it's your turn to speak, lean in. Make sure you get a little bit of the amplification. You can hear me now as the amplification's working. The folks in the back can hear. Otherwise, it's tough for them to follow. So just we're making a sound recording, of course, and we want to make sure we make a good record. So please help us do that. So let's begin. I did prepare Senator Mulikowski, if you just hold off for 1 second, I prepared a list of questions that you have in front of you. And Mr. Patasin, you just finished with, I think, what may be the biggest question, at least in the minds of many of the folks here, which is, you know, which state laws now on the book are, in the words of Mr. Bullard, void? It's not as if they've been repealed, but the legal status is they're void because of a superseding opinion by a high court. And do any of you have a list of those statutes that you can refer us to? Mr. Patasin.
Thanks. 1513.067A, 1513.135. Our current law states that corporations and labor unions may not make...
I'm sorry, those numbers again?
Sure.
1513.067A.
1513.135.
Okay, and go ahead and tell us what they say.
Generally, they disallow corporations and labor unions from making an independent expenditure in a candidate election. This gets into the distinction of what exactly is an expenditure and whether an expenditure is always considered political speech. Given the definition of expenditure, generally I would consider some of the definition of expenditure to include political speech, some of it arguably not. But again, that's something that we're working on internally to determine the extent to which our laws are now, the extent to which there's a problem with the current statutes and current definitions under the law.
Let me ask a more general question. Did we have on our statutes the same limitations that the federal government did with respect to independent expenditures by corporate and union money in the 30 days before a general election?
Well, our law contemplates a ban on all independent expenditures by corporations and labor unions. The federal law allowed for essentially PACs to be formed, and they could speak through that method. But from the general corporate treasury, if a communication were to hit more than 50,000 individuals, then that would be considered a banned speech under the federal regime. So our laws are not exactly the same. And that's, again, an area where we're trying to reconcile the two opinions. First, the opinion of Citizens United, and then our own internal opinion about how far our statutes go and how close they link up with what was decided in the court. So,
but if I understood your answer, Mr. Patasin, we've gone from a total ban to what is now what now looks like is a total free-for-all.
Again, I take a look at what the laws say with respect to disclosure. I take a look at what the laws say with respect to expenditure. This case didn't interpret an Alaska decision or Alaska law, but at the same time, our laws are subject to constitutional scrutiny, given that U.S. Citizens United is the law of the land at this point.
Mr. Bullard, you look like you wanted to add something. And pull the mic around, please. We're just going to have to keep doing that all throughout the hearing.
I don't think it's a terribly material point to add to what John has said, which I agree with. But we do allow some corporations under Alaska law to make independent expenditures. These are nonprofits that fit under our definition of non-group entities. And so it's not that all corporations were prohibited before, but those corporations that participated in business activities, who had shareholders, who had a claim on corporate earnings, and were independent of the influence of business corporations. So the window that has been opened is not as large as the absolute window of the corporate form.
But just so we're clear, do you believe in this election cycle in 2010 that any corporation doing business in the state of Alaska is free to spend money advocating for or against the election of individual candidates?
With respect, it's difficult to speculate how this federal case will be interpreted by our state courts. It's a complex and dynamic area of law, and there may be other rationales that support some of our existing legal rationales that support our existing laws, and so it's difficult to say.
Let me ask one more question, then I'll open it up. I know there's lots of questions from other members, but will it take a specific action by a corporation will it take subsequent legal action in order for the statutes on our books to be void, as you said in your opening statement? Or do you believe those are void by virtue of the rendering of the decision in Citizens United?
Through the chair, it's when one of our laws is challenged that a court will rule. whether the Department of Law will choose to attempt to enforce a statute which is arguably unconstitutional is a separate question. It might be a better question for John.
And Mr. Patasson, Mr. Bowler makes a good point. The enforcement of these laws is left up to the Attorney General's office. It's not as if a citizen can go to court and ask, and it's not as if any candidate can go to court and ask that the election laws be enforced. It's up to your department. What's your view?
Well, at this time, we acknowledge that the law is subject to scrutiny, and we're in the process of making a strong review of how to go forward. With respect to our working internal analysis, I think an opinion on just that point is probably forthcoming, though, at this point. Again, given what the expenditure law is in Alaska and given the case-by-case nature, again, we're just trying to make sure that we give the best analysis to the public and to the legislature and the governor at this point. But, again, we are working diligently on that issue.
And just, of course, our only opportunity to pass laws, trying to put some sidebars on this decision, will end when the session ends. Do you anticipate having direction to us within the next, week, 2 weeks? Can you give me a sense for your internal timeline?
Well, we've been working on the Citizens United matter on a related basis on something else that had come up with APOC back in November. So it's not as if it's been new to me or the attorneys working in this area over the last 13 days. We certainly have opinions about this, and we're certainly working on them, and we've been addressing those with the Attorney General. The Attorney General hasn't been asked for a formal advisory opinion at this point, but we're certainly working towards a complete analysis, and this may be an area where an Attorney General opinion is appropriate. And with respect to when that opinion can be forthcoming, I couldn't speculate, but given the time parameters, it could be relatively quickly, yeah.
Let me go ahead and turn it over to other members of the committee. Senator Wilikowski and then Senator Coghill.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. By my count, the Supreme Court in this case overturned at least five prior Supreme Court cases. Is that what your count is, roughly?
Microphone.
through the chair to Mr. Wilikowski. The two noteworthy opinions that the court overturned were McConnell v. FEC in 2003 and Austin v. Michigan Chamber of Commerce in 1990.
Also, I think FEC versus Wisconsin Right to Life, FEC versus Massachusetts Citizens for Life, and California Medical Association versus FEC were all noted by the dissent as being cases that were either overruled or disavowed.
With respect to right to life, the main holding in that case was that electioneering communication has to be explicit. In this case, Citizens United, the court overwhelmingly found that the communication was an electioneering communication, so they didn't overturn WRTL. With respect to Massachusetts Citizens for Life, that's the case that carved out the exception to the law with respect to smaller corporations that's primary purpose is for political speech, essentially these nonprofits like our non-group entity law. So I don't think that WRTL and MCFL were essentially overturned by the court's decision, but the two main decisions that were overturned were aspects of FEC McConnell and Austin, the City Chamber of Commerce.
And the just general on on sort of corporate law, it's not something that I specialize in. I don't know if any of you do or not, but it seems to me that corporations exist only because the state allows them to exist. Is that correct?
Senator Wilikowski through the chair. Corporations are a legal fiction. And, I mean, they exist by virtue of state and federal law.
May I follow
up? Yeah, please.
Sure. I have a series of questions. If corporations, and I'm not, I don't want to argue with, I'm just, I'm trying to understand the limitations on what the state could or could not put on corporations. If corporations exist as a legal fiction, but for the will of the state government, could not the state government impose restrictions, regulations on those corporations?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair. There are a lot of different corporations out there. Some exist in an arena that is only spoken to by state law, some in a larger, more complex environment, say a national bank. So it's difficult to provide a single answer to your question.
Well, the Supreme Court held that corporations are entitled to First Amendment speech, and corporations don't exist but for the state allowing them to exist, correct?
That's correct.
There are no federal corporations, right? Are there?
Ms. Kurtz, you ought to get close to the microphone.
Well, there's something in 441B talks about corporations, any corporation organized by authority of any law of Congress. That's old language. It's been there for a long time. John, please correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know exactly what corporations those are. The corporations that I'm most familiar with would be organized under the state law of Alaska or the state law of Delaware, but I think the main thing is that the United States Supreme Court just laid down a right to speech in this area for corporations, and I don't think it matters whether the state of Alaska tries to legislate in Title 15 or over in the Corporations Code. We're still going to encounter that right defined by the Supreme Court.
If I could follow up, does the state have to allow corporations to exist? I mean, could the state say we don't want to allow corporations to exist?
The consequences of that declaration could be quite wide-ranging and interesting.
I'm just trying to understand.
I think you win the understatement of the day.
Parameters of what the state can and can't do when it allows corporations to exist. Let me ask you a different question. If a corporation exists and it has all foreign or a vast majority of foreign stockholders, would those foreign stockholders be able to, and that corporation be able to influence elections under this new Supreme Court case?
You know, the question of foreign corporations was addressed explicitly by the court in its opinion, where it said this provision doesn't distinguish between foreign corporations and other corporations, so we don't have to decide about the free speech rights of foreign corporations. So that's what we know from the decision. I would also note, I think there's another provision in BCRA in the federal law that does limit the ability of those corporations to speak.
So once you finish that, and let me get to Senator Coggill.
Okay, just a couple more questions. So I guess what I'm getting at is, could the Saudi government or Pakistani government, Chinese government, set up a corporation in Alaska and attempt to influence elections under this law?
Senator, I'm not an expert in corporate law, so I'm not comfortable answering questions about what restrictions they would face in incorporating or in participating in our political process.
Anyone else have an opinion on that question? Mr. Patassin?
Yeah. Just to reiterate, Citizens United did not invalidate 441E of BCRA, and that law does essentially limit foreign nationals, and foreign nationals includes foreign corporations, from speech in not only federal elections but state elections. So there's an expenditure law, a federal expenditure law, and we're also looking at the parameters of that law that does not allow for foreign corporations to speak in state candidate elections. Given that law and given your questions, this is an area that's covered in the CFRs, in federal regulations. Again, this is an area where I think we're going to need to give the public a lot of guidance as to, and the legislature, about how far that federal law goes and whether, you know, the state of Alaska wants to consider laws in this area. Because essentially what we have is a ban on all corporate expenditures, foreign, domestic, from another state. So what we have to consider is, do we want to start distinguishing between foreign or out-of-state or in-state corporations? And we're certainly working on and working up towards positions and determinations, especially with respect to federal law and foreign national corporations. So,
thank you. And let's turn now to Senator Coghill.
Thank you. And I'm going to probably ask a big picture question and then the reporting question as it applies to Alaska from here, and how that dynamic works. But the 527s, those are the PACs that are generally referred to on the federal level. Is that what I understand correctly?
Correct.
Okay. And so there's been no challenge to their freedom of speech under that particular scenario. So this breaks a veil between organizing as a political action committee over against just doing it as a corporation, is the way I understand it.
And Citizens United took issue with the PAC formation in that the PAC wasn't the same thing as the corporation, and it does, on a certain level, break the need, I guess, for a corporation to form a PAC in order to speak 30 days or 60 days before certain elections.
Okay. I'm just trying to get the structure so that I understand kind of where we're headed. Then the other thing is, you mentioned reporting, and we spent pretty much the time on their ability to speak. But there's still going to be an accountability as to how they speak, true?
Correct. And again, Department of Law is taking a very close look at current reporting laws for corporations and labor unions, given the present statutes. And again, those opinions will be shared going forward.
So, Mr. Chairman, I guess what I'm looking at is they are right now more restrictive than an individual, and we want to make sure they don't become less restrictive than the individual as we move along. So it's just trying to figure out how to look at the big picture on this as we're moving forward.
Well, through the chair, just to clarify, when our statutes contemplate disclosure and disclaimer laws for corporations and labor unions, look at the language of the statutes with respect to persons. Persons is the laws that apply to corporations and labor unions at this point in the area of disclosure and disclaimer. Certain laws apply to corporations and labor unions given that definition. Certain laws do not. And that's what's going to merit further scrutiny going forward.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's what I was trying to do, is drill down to the context of where we're at. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. We have a question from Senator Egan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not only am I not a corporate attorney, I'm not an attorney at all. And I just want to go a little further on what Senator Coghill was asking. With the Supreme Court ruling, can you be more simplistic and tell me, on your initial review of that decision, what kind of corporations licensed in Alaska can contribute? I mean, just you know, 527s, okay, but.
Through the chair, Mr. Egan, again, the case didn't determine that corporations can make contributions to candidates directly. The law was, the case was about independent expenditures made absent any coordination with a legislator.
Follow up.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you expect litigation? I guess that's a pretty dumb question, but
it's hard to say. I mean, I do represent APOC. I represent APOC staff in adjudications. It's just hard to make a comment on that at this point, because there is no current litigation that challenges. So.
Senator Egan, follow up.
Yeah, thank you. Just one quick.
Sure.
And you answer that question, because you're representing APOC, and I'm just wondering if APOC staff or the APOC division is looking specifically separately from the Department of Law into this, because they're more knowledgeable at least they follow this on a day-to-day basis.
Right, and that's where, you know, I work closely with APOC, and I advise the Attorney General. So any advice I give in this area, it is after consulting with APOC staff on the law going forward. So.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And we had scheduled Tom Dosick from APOC to be here, whose father, I understand, passed away Sunday night, and I saw him in the airport Monday. He was on his way to Florida, and so I know he had planned to be here, but for the tragedy in his family. Senator McGuire.
Thank you, and through the chair. So I think where we're left is with the fact that if this legislature, this session, doesn't enact a law dealing with disclosure of expenditures, limitations on expenditures, identification of communications, and reporting requirements for the for-profit corporations in this state, that we could face an upcoming election season where for-profit companies are out there sort of in the dark, spending money at whatever amount and doing it without disclosing who they are and what's being spent. So I think I'd just like clarification, but I think that's one of the main points you're making today, is that we're left without that gap. I don't see anything that I've seen in the ruling that doesn't allow us to require disclosure and perhaps even some limitation. And I'm kind of thinking about when Roe v. Wade came down and how people felt about that. There's a lot of emotion, certainly, but it was clear it was the law of the land. And states were then faced with the question about just how much they could regulate abortion and where those limits were. And, of course, we have Casey and the things that followed. So I think we're in that place, but I'd just like clarification that at least today we can be clear that if the legislature was to do anything, we should at least look at disclosure requirements and reporting requirements so that these for-profit corporations aren't left in the dark.
Mr. Patasson?
Through the chair, again, this particular area of the law does require some unpacking by the legislature, the Department of Law, which current disclaimer and disclosure laws apply to corporations today and which ones do not. And from a preliminary analysis, you have to look at which laws apply to persons and which do not. As a preliminary analysis, under 040, that's our main disclosure law, and corporations and labor unions are required no later than 10 days after an expenditure is made to report that expenditure.
Which provision of 040? That's a huge statute.
That's D and E.
D and E. Thank you. And so, and just for the clarification, because I had made a big mark around D, because D is interesting. It says every individual, person, non-group entity, or group making an expenditure. And just for my clarification, you're putting unions and corporations under person.
Correct.
But not individual. Individual means a natural person. Is that
correct?
Right? Okay. So every time I see person in these statutes, I need to read in corporation and union.
And in the inverse, when you don't see person, it should cause you pause to note that arguably that law may not apply to a labor union or corporation at this time.
Right. Right. So more follow-up, Senator McGuire.
Well, thank you very much.
You did, Senator McGuire, bring up, I think, what a lot of folks have seen as sort of the bulwark against this enormous opinion, which is disclosure. What rules right now, remind me what rules apply to nonprofit corporations, the ones that we do allow some limited spending by in elections. Mr. Bullard, looks like you're ready to go.
Some nonprofits report under that same statute, subsection J.
So if we were to go to J, it would say that except as provided in L, each non-group entity, that's a nonprofit And can I just say, if I were going to rewrite this whole statute, I would take non-group entity out of there entirely. It's one of the least descriptive terms I've ever come across in working through statutes, a non-group entity. It's like jellyfish. I don't know what it means. But you're saying a non-group entity is a nonprofit, shall make full report in accordance with team upon a form, listing name, each officer, aggregate amount, contributions, date. And these disclosures are required to be made electronically or on paper?
Through the chair, that's determined by 15.13.110. And I'm not sure.
I would actually defer to John. Mr. Tayson.
Okay. Mr. Tayson? Non-group entities, paper or internet?
Again, it's a pretty specific question, and Tom Dosick would have been a great person to answer that today. I can certainly get the information to you. I believe that type of expenditure would be reported on what APOC staff calls its 15-6 form, and my understanding is that those are filed in paper. So
it looks like paper to me. Just a quick look at 110 looks like paper, and I can imagine that what we'll be looking at is quicker disclosure. You know, corporations are well-heeled, as the dissent points out. They have an enormous ability to amass wealth. If they want to participate in elections, it strikes me as being reasonable that they should be disclosing as frequently as possible, and in a manner that gets the information out to the public as swiftly as possible, and not putting the burden on APOC staff to either scan the documents and upload them and so forth, but to make the disclosures rapidly.
Mr. Chairman, on that point,
Senator Coghill.
It's just that we have set about in a direction to do electronic reporting that we have not arrived at yet, but we have set about to do that. And it's a work in progress. The way I've seen it over the last couple of years, we tried to do a mandate on it and just could not get there because of length of distance in Alaska, our ability to perform in the APOC world. So it's just it's taken us time. But that is kind of the direction we've been heading in the last several years.
And just for clarification, you're I think you are talking about the disclosures made by candidates.
Yes, but it would involve all entities here under this.
Well, I believe personally in electronic disclosure by candidates as well. I know we've run into some roadblocks on that. Right. You know, I live in a part of the state that's got lots of computers and lots of telephone wires. Not everybody does. And so there was some concern about that.
That may be something as we move along that gets right back into the radar screen.
Right, right. I think my general point, though, is that corporations are in a uniquely a strong position to have access to computers and the internet. And Ms. Kurtz, did you have something you wanted to add?
I would just point the committee to 15.13.040M. Information required under this chapter shall be submitted to the commission electronically. So there is something in there about submitting things electronically, and I'm sure APOC could clarify better than I exactly how they're doing, what they need to make that work.
That may be the carve out for those of us who are candidates. But I agree that there's at least a leaning towards electronic disclosure. So we have covered many of the questions that I submitted to you, but I guess that's Senator Wilkowski, or did
if you're done.
Let me just ask one more question, and that is about not only disclosure to APOC, but I think there's some concern that there be disclosure made in each individual advertisement, that is an on-screen disclosure, so that individuals viewing these electioneering ads understand what the source of the money behind them is, to prevent several corporations performing something innocuous sounding like Americans for Good Jobs and then sort of operating behind that bland sounding name. Was there anything in the Supreme Court opinion, or is there anything on our statutes that would prohibit us from writing stringent laws requiring mandating the disclosure of, say, the top three contributors to a group or a sub-corporation called Americans for Jobs.
Again, the Citizens United took up an independent expenditure coming directly from a corporate or labor union treasury, and the disclosure laws followed from that type of expenditure. 074F, 1513074F, currently bars corporations and labor unions from making contributions to groups that aren't ballot measure groups. So with your concern about, you know, the new formation of a different group that's going to essentially do the speaking, that merits certain scrutiny, but I just would like to point out that there's a statute that deals with that particular issue, but also that Citizens United only discussed a corporation making independent expenditure speech from its own treasury, and it didn't go to any further length to talk about pass-through issues or anything else. This is pure speech from a corporation from its own coffers. That's what was taken up at Citizens United.
And I understand that, and maybe I wasn't clear enough. I guess my concern is that you would, any corporation may now advocate for the direct election of a candidate, independent of that candidate's efforts. Obviously, it has to be an independent expenditure. But the fact that Citizens United dealt with a single entity doesn't, I can't imagine that a court would be limited by that in anticipating a future case where you had two or three or more corporations either joining forces or forming a new corporation that sort of hid the source of the funds that are being used to electioneer. And I guess I'm trying to get through that, sort of pierce the corporate veil. I mean, that's not exactly the right term. I know that's it's got a separate meaning, but get behind that cover so that citizens know who the individuals or who the corporations are that are advancing electioneering ads.
And I think that in the coming time, we have to take aim at these disclosure and disclaimer laws. And what's required of a corporation at this point is 040D and E. And what we take away from that is that, you know, they're essentially spending money from their own corporate treasury. And the decision in Citizens United didn't get into some of these areas that are certainly contemplated as kind of corollary issues, and we're certainly working on those as well. So.
Thank you. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. And still, I'm trying to get my arms around what, if and what we can do in terms of corporations. We allow them to exist. What kind of limitations, if any, can we place on them in regards to this case, in regards to campaign disclosure, in regards to reporting requirements, in regards to their ability to do advertisements when they have foreign shareholders? Do we have any ability?
Through the chair, Mr. Wilikowski's question. Again, disclaimer and disclosure laws were held constitutional, and if you look at the laws that were contemplated under Citizens United, they are very similar to the disclosure and disclaimer laws that Alaska places upon groups and non-group entities present day. Given that, and the foreign national question is a question that, and a foreign corporation question, again, there's an issue of federal law. There's federal law and federal regulation on that issue. So whether there's limits on disclaimer and disclosure, this case didn't determine any outward limit on disclaimer and disclosure. What it ruled upon was the actual act of speech, the actual expenditure on speech.
So. If I could follow up. But, okay, if we could the state of Alaska enact a law that said we will not allow corporations that have a majority stake, foreign shareholders, for instance, to advocate on behalf of candidates in the state of Alaska? Could we pass a law like that?
Again, we have to take a close look at what the federal government already has in place in that issue. And again, it's an area where we have to determine whether additional state law would, is it all appropriate or whether there can be additional state law on that issue. There is federal law on the matter, 441E, under the BCRA. So,
Ms. Kurtz, you look like you had something to add.
Sorry.
No.
Yeah, just in terms of your work examining the impact of this decision on Alaska's law, the existing statute, 1513.135, that Mr. Tayson referred to right at the outset, does have some of these things you're talking about. The Citizens United decision very clearly upheld disclaimer, this ad paid for, and identification requirements. There's no constitutional problem there. The issue is, in something like 135, we have some of those requirements, but they don't apply to corporations because our existing statutory structure does not contemplate corporations being able to make independent expenditures. So if you're looking at how to fix the statutes to go in the direction you were indicating, that might be a place to start.
What in 135?
What in 135? Well, the first sentence is a problem because it says only an individual group or non-group entity may make an independent expenditure. That, I think, is directly contrary to what we just got out of the Citizens United decision. I don't know exactly how that will be invalidated, if we're going to get a court decision, or if the legislature will just look at that and go, oh, that's not going to work.
I mean, isn't it the case? I mean, I appreciate the sort of the clarity. It seems like you can just, in essence, now write in the word person into that list because they've now said a corporation is free to make an independent expenditure supporting or opposing a candidate in election for public office.
I don't know whether the solution, depending on where you're trying to go, I don't know whether the solution would be as simple as inserting the word person, and that might be perhaps why one would be circumspect in, I can't draft verbally. But what we've got now is a lot of statutes, and this one in particular saying an individual group or non-group entity, and as Mr. Bullard referred to earlier, yeah, there are some corporations that are non-group entities, but only a certain small select group that meet the MCFL factors, and that's
it's all been undermined by the decision.
It's been changed by the decision. The assumption that only those corporations could, only MCFL non-group entity type corporations could make an independent expenditure is no longer valid. So this statute is now missing the disclosure and ID requirements, the disclaimer, that it would apply to the same communication by an individual group or non-group entity. Corporation wouldn't obviously fall under that, and under 040, that's a reporting statute. So it's not real clear, and that's one of the issues in looking at these. Yeah. Corporations are persons, but person is not in 135.
Senator Wilkowski.
So procedurally under 135, would we have to take, would we have to actively change that, or would a corporation have to come in and request a declaratory judgment? Or if we just do nothing, they're technically violating state law. And then, I mean, what's the process here?
It depends on what's going on. But I can tell you that a corporation might look at 1513.135 and go, that doesn't apply to us. Because, it doesn't say person. It's not clear that it does.
Yeah.
It wasn't written so it would. So you can't assume that a corporation interested in making an independent expenditure will just do this. Legislative action would be required to make it clear under 1513.135 that corporations are also supposed to do this when they make independent expenditures.
Senator.
Okay, so if we take no action, then a corporation is technically violating the law under 135.
I don't know what that corporation is doing, so no, I'm not going to say they're violating.
Well, if they're making an independent expenditure supporting or opposing a candidate.
And violating the law, but if there is where you might get a challenge to the Alaska law, and the Alaska law might be vulnerable given this Citizens United precedent.
That seems clear to me.
Or the legislature certainly has the power to go ahead and proactively amend statutes in light of this decision, even without a court saying it has to be done. Or that it's unconstitutional. This body does have the power to enact disclosure, disclaimer, identification requirements. It already has, but it's not clear under the existing statutes that those would apply to independent expenditures by corporations, that what's on the books would.
Thank you. Senator McGuire.
No.
Sorry. Okay. So that's Senator Wilkowski and Senator Cox.
So we're actually in a situation right now where corporations have more freedom, more rights, more ability to campaign than individuals. under current Alaska law.
I'm not sure I'd say that. I would have to think harder about the implications of what you're saying before I could give you an answer to that broad of a question. I'm sorry.
Mr. Bullard, looks like you had the same desire to speak.
It's possible that you could characterize the situation that way. Corporations still can't make contributions to candidates, and it's unclear how these statutes will be interpreted by a court in light of the Citizens United ruling. So a lot would depend on the specifics and the facts in a given situation.
Senator Coghill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And actually, that was going to be one of the points I brought up. I think we need to clarify that they don't have more than any one individual may have, though they may be able to speak with a louder voice. I mean, I think that's probably the issue that some people are going to complain about, is they're able to speak with a louder voice. However, that has been happening anyway in a different venue under the 524s, 527s, in a large way. So then, as we look at our statutes, we want to make sure that there's an accountability issue. It'd be my thinking is to make sure that if they're going to speak, that we know who's speaking, what they're speaking about, and even maybe the cost of what it takes for them to speak, so that they become accountable no different than any other individual who is going to buy ads and campaign in that particular regard. So I think as we look at this, that's the direction I would head in, is given this decision that they have the right to speak, which I tend to agree with, but there needs to be accountability, that if we're missing that accountability in our statutes along the way, I want to make sure that reporting, ID, identifications, and whatever limits an individual may have that are constitutional apply.
Comment?
Just wanted to agree with the senator, except for with a little different twist.
Senator Wilkowski.
Oh, no, I would agree. I think it's imperative, because the way I read this right now, corporations have more rights to free speech than regular, ordinary Alaskans. I think we need to change that.
I think I see a committee bill in my future. remind me what the deadline is for filing legislation. Anybody know off the top?
13th, I think.
13th of?
February.
February.
I think.
Personal.
Oh, that's personal. I'm sorry, that's personal.
Anytime? Okay. So nothing but time.
65 whole days.
Let me take a brief at ease. Discuss amongst ourselves possible future courses of action. Let me ask if the committee has more questions now for the panel of experts that we have assembled in front of us. Senator McGuire.
I'll just ask the final question. I said to Senator French, I don't know if there's a way to clarify it more, but so as I gave the analogy before of Roe v. Wade and then a Webster-Casey comeback, we don't know how other states will respond and what types of limitations with respect to disclosure and so forth that will be placed. But I guess it's worthwhile to go ahead and make the starting point where we are with nonprofits. But I'm curious to know if you think out of that ruling there's any place that doesn't allow for, let's say, a dollar threshold limitation or any kind of, so the timelines, I think, make clear sense. I can't imagine a court coming back and saying that wouldn't be a state's interest to have the disclosure, who it is, in a timely manner and so forth. But on the dollar amounts, I wonder if there's been any thought.
Just real briefly, I think that goes back to the Buckley v. Vallejo decision, and it approved contribution limits, but not expenditure limits. So there's a limit on what the legislature can do in that area with expenditures, despite the presence of dollar limits with the contributions.
Got it.
Thank you. Senator Coghill.
First of all, Mr. Chairman, I wanted to thank you for bringing this up so that we could not discuss this in front of the rest of Alaska. I think the freedom of speech being so dear to all of us, and yet you can see the tension between those who might have more authority over others. So I think that's good. But just like an individual, if they are wealthy because of inventing something like Microsoft, for example, we actually do have some contribution limitations on them. But we're not going to say to them they can't spend their wealth to express their opinion any way they want to. And so I think that's also a criteria that I think I would look at if we're going to equate them to the same speech capacity as an individual. Then I think there's an accountability, but there's also a reporting, but the limitations to say what you can talk about. And I think that I'd have a hard time doing that.
Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, and the court's ruled the way the court's ruled, and I think it's probably the worst decision in my lifetime, the worst case of judicial activism certainly in my lifetime. But it is what it is. We are where we are. And one thing which I would certainly like to look into is foreign companies, foreign shareholders should not have the right to influence elections in Alaska. And I would like, Mr. Chair, to request that we look into that. Because foreigners right now can't donate to political candidates. And we've created this legal fiction now where they are able to influence elections in Alaska. And I think that's very dangerous. I don't think that's what Alaskans would like to see, and I think that's something that we should explore. Thank you.
Just to debate the point, Mr. Chairman?
Sure.
We have already been subject to that in many ways through the PAC law. So I don't know that we're going to stop that to that degree if we're going to be able to get the 51% ownership or whatever. So I think that we'll have a hard time getting there, but I'd be willing to look into it myself.
Further comments? I'll use the pleasure of the gavel to read two selections from the dissent from Justice Stevens, which in my view is one of the great works of his long and distinguished careers. And he said at one point in state elections that should concern us, the interests of non-resident corporations may be fundamentally adverse to the interests of local voters. Consequently, when corporations grab up the prime broadcasting slots on the eve of an election, they can flood the market with advocacy that bears little or no correlation to the ideas of natural persons or to any broader notion of the public good. The opinions of real people may be marginalized. He closed his opinion by saying this: at bottom, the court's opinion is thus a rejection of the common sense of the American people, who have recognized a need to prevent corporations from undermining self-government since the founding, and who have fought against the distinctive corrupting potential of corporate electioneering since the days of Theodore Roosevelt. It is a strange time to repudiate that common sense. While American democracy is imperfect, few outside the majority of this court would have thought its flaws included a dearth of corporate money in politics. Over the next couple of weeks, I'll be working with the members of this committee and the members of our alleged legal to craft some laws to contain this decision, and I hope you all will join me in making this as good a bill as possible. With that, we are adjourned.